Hey everyone, welcome to Recovery Rocks. This episode is sponsored by the folks at Sour Humanoid Vinegar.
And Sour Humanoid!
When I say the folks, I mean my partner who just started this amazing vinegar brand. Sour Humanoid is designed for cooking, created by a New York City sommelier who got sober after working at Michelin-starred restaurants and curating award-winning wine lists. This vinegar is an excellent way to make any meal special with very little effort. Check out some of the easy recipes at sourhumanoid.com. And we've had Nick on an episode before. He's, you know, a fellow sober entrepreneur, and we're excited to have Sour Humanoid sponsor this episode.
It's an amazing story, and I will give a brief testimonial just because I don't cook, but I have sent Sour Humanoid gift packs as gifts over the holidays to a couple of my friends who are big cooks, and it got rave reviews. So user tested, customer tested, and all thumbs up. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Recovery Rocks. It's Lisa, and I am here with my incredible, talented, accomplished BFF.
Wow. I love that. Thank you. it's Tawny. I am in awe of your, what did you say? You said like talent, and you said just such wonderful
accomplished.
Things. Accomplished. Yeah. I learned everything I know. I learned from you. So thank you for passing. You passed the torch. So, and now let's pass the mic to our guest, Frida.
Yeah, I'm so happy to be here. Sorry.
So excited. Let me introduce to you our special guest today, Frida Love Smith. And Frida is a writer, teacher, and retired indie rock drummer. What could be cooler than that? She has a new memoir she's going to talk about with us today, which is just so cool. It's called I Quit Everything, and it explores addiction, intoxication, and sort of the twilight of her musical career. Her first book was called, which I know, Tawny, you're obsessed with, Red Velvet Underground, which documents a year of cooking lessons with her son and reminiscences about drumming with a host of rock bands. So who is cooler to have on Recovery Rocks?
Seriously, how perfect.
Right? So thank you for coming on, Frida. It's great to meet you.
It's great to meet you. It's an honor to be here. I love this podcast. And as soon as I heard about it, I thought, like, that just sounds like a podcast made for me as a listener. Aww. And as a guest. So I'm really honored. And Tawny, I love your book. We are also pub date twins,
yes,
which is very exciting. And yeah, I'm a big fan. I'm delighted to be here.
Oh, we're so thrilled to have you. Do you want to talk about a little bit about, you know, kind of what inspired I Quit Everything and sort of how, because it felt to me very much like walking around, you know, a park and listening to a friend go through sort of this happened to that. And it's not, it's almost some many short chapters, anecdotes. It's a lot more anecdotal and puts you right in the moment of the period that Frida is questioning all these things, then quitting all these things, then, you know, re-examining them later on and how they might fit into her life. So this is also a great, this is not, you know, just for people in recovery. This is for sober curious, for anybody who just wants to look at the role that certain substances play in life. You don't have to be on any kind of sobriety journey to really get a lot out of it. So it's so different than other things out there. So I was curious, like how that all came together for you.
Well, thank you so much. I'm glad that you picked up on what I intended to be a pretty conversational tone and really an investigation and exploration rather than a declaration of I have got this all figured out. And it really started with me at a low point. I mean, actually, to borrow language from 12-step programs, like I had hit a kind of a bottom for me. It was a quiet kind of interior bottom. Like I probably looked perfectly functional. I probably looked like I was doing okay. I didn't wake up in jail. I didn't wake up in a ditch, but I really wasn't I wasn't okay. And the timeline of the narrative, it starts during the pandemic, about 10 months in, things were difficult. And honestly, like I was losing it. Like a lot of people, I was drinking more, and it was unconscious drinking. I wasn't thinking about it. I was just crawling through the day, getting to the end of the day, and then pouring the whiskey. And I got to a point where I realized this was taking a lot more than it was giving for me. Mm-hmm. And you know, in my mind, I think I thought of it as a treat. Like, oh, I get through this hard day and I'm like working on Zoom and there's all this stress and there's all of this angry, violent rhetoric swirling around in the political culture and all of this fear. And so I think I set myself up to think like, well, I deserve this whiskey at the end of the day, and this is my treat. And then I realized my treat was just beating me up. It wasn't doing me any good. And I knew that something needed to happen. And I guess that's the gift of the low, low, low point. You know that something's got to change, and there's motivation that can be found there. There's energy that can be generated by reaching that bottom. So I knew that alcohol had to go at least temporarily. And I think if I hadn't felt so badly, I wouldn't have had the energy. I wouldn't have had the stamina to undertake the experiment that this book documents, which started with me saying, I need a break from alcohol, like total break, total step back. And then I just examined some of my other addictions and habits that had also compounded during the pandemic, like social media, for example. Again, I think I'd thought of it as, oh, it's this positive thing. I can spend some time connecting with people. I can see what's going on with people. And I think there are a lot of very positive uses for social media. But it had become pretty addictive, and it had become this empty experience, just scrolling, 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 just feeling less connected and not more connected. So again, I just knew like, I just need to take a break and just reevaluate my relationship with this habit, with this practice, with this way that I'm spending my time, increasingly a lot of my time. So I threw that on the fire. I thought sugar, I've been eating more. I haven't been eating as well. Again, thinking like of this as a treat or a way to nurture myself and care for myself during the pandemic, which maybe it was at first, but it had crossed a line. Caffeine, which had started to affect me adversely. This was actually a very physical problem that I developed with caffeine, where I was having heart palpitations and high blood pressure, and it was serious. I don't recommend that anybody give up coffee if they don't have to, but I really had to. And what else did I give up? Oh, and weed. So I just needed to reevaluate. It was another thing that had just become like routinized, unconscious, just have my gummy every night instead of thinking like, do I want that? Do I need that? Can I benefit from that? I just was such a robot, and I wanted to stop being a robot. So I quit all of those things. I dropped one thing a month, and I kept a diary, a detailed daily diary, which I think is where you're picking up on that slightly conversational tone and these little fragmented chapters, these little bits. It's because the book really developed out of my record of my withdrawal, of my adjustment, and just kind of trying to process my weird relationship to some of these substances, with alcohol being by far the most complicated and the most emotional of all of them.
I mean, would you say that you've, like, for listeners who have not, you know, read the book yet, would you say that you've found balance? Would you say that you've found, you've obviously, like, with a social experiment like this, you're learning about yourself, you're learning about your relationship to things, substances, behaviors. How do you feel today?
It was just incredibly productive to take a break. And that's something that I wholeheartedly recommend to anyone who feels like they may be slipping into tricky territory with some of these things. And I don't think you have to like necessarily, I think some people do, but I think many of us don't necessarily have to quit something forever to benefit from it. So I didn't have any alcohol for 8 months, which wasn't something that I even thought was possible when I first started the experiment. And so just the way that quitting, even temporarily, can build your confidence, it can build a certain kind of a muscle. Mm-hmm. And it did retrain me to make different decisions and to at least have a gap, have a pause. I mean, I call myself 99% sober now. I recently came across that term and I love that. I love that. I mean, I barely drink because I learned that I felt much better without, because I learned that it seemed more likely that I could have the kind of life I wanted to have without, especially without just pouring whiskey all over my feelings mm-hmm. every night. I don't know, that was raw. That was difficult. But what I found when I got through it was just that I can do that. I can have feelings. I can feel my feelings and I can make conscious decisions about what I do and kind of what I want the rest of my life to look like. I think there's a lot of this that is very much like a midlife story as well. But yeah, I wouldn't say that I've landed in a perfect place of enlightenment, but I just feel like I have so much more space mm-hmm. and it's such an incredible relief. I had an event last night in a bar in Evanston that was partly a book talk and partly a gig. I did a little bit of singing and I played a little percussion. And you know, this is the environment where I always, always, just without thinking about it, have some beers, have some whiskey. And because I haven't forbidden myself from doing that, and that's just me, like that's kind of where I'm at, there were a couple of times in the night where I was like, oh, do I want to have a drink? And the deal that I've made with myself is that I can have one, but I just have to take a minute and think about it. Is that really what I want? Is that really going to benefit me? What am I going to feel like tomorrow when I wake up in the morning? Mm-hmm. And so I just, with a little bit of awareness, with just a couple of breaths and a little bit of space, I got through that whole night and I didn't have any alcohol. And it's still like a revelation to me that I can even do that. And I'm just so grateful. And I think that things like Dry January and Sober October, like I'm a big advocate for these now. And in fact, it was rhetoric around Dry January that gave me the initial idea to quit, because it was that, and it connects to the one day at a time thing as well, that it's like, I'm not saying I'm never, ever, ever going to do this. I'm just saying like right now I got to do something different.
I love that so much. And something that comes up a lot when I do my press for my book, people who still drink love, there's a line in my book where I say, you know, I quit drinking in November 15, but I don't know if I'm ever going to drink again. Like that, and coming up on 8 years without alcohol, I still don't say I'm never going to drink again. You can't. Yeah. Like you truly cannot. Even if, like, you know, Lisa comes from the 12-step world, like that's why we say one day at a time.
Yes.
If you think about never having a drink at XYZ event, that's too much to think about. It's just right now. It's today. Do you want to have a drink today?
Yeah. And yeah, I've do never I said, have a drink I'll this never minute. Drink again either. Wow. 19 years in. Yes, I say, 19. I say I'm not going to drink today because there's just no reason to put that pressure on my, why? What is that? It doesn't accomplish anything to say, I'm never drinking again.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. Now I've just put pressure on myself.
It sounds like this little switch, but it's so big. It really cuts deep. It's incredibly helpful. And yeah, I'm not surprised that people connect with that line in your book. I think that's something that could help a lot of people if they could really get that.
Well, yeah, exactly. And it's, again, it's the people that still drink that have read my book that's their takeaway is like, oh, wow. Like they, in their mind, which was also, this was in my mind too, of like, I can't say I'll never drink again, but you don't have to think that way. And I really appreciate this conversation and your book because I'm aware that there's some danger here of like some people cannot find a healthy relationship with a substance, you know,
absolutely.
And you're friends, not saying like you're right. not saying this is a book about how to have a healthy relationship with alcohol. This is what you did. And this is where you are today. And there's, you know, with 8 years of recovery, I've done a significant amount of work on why I self-medicated, you know, and it's like,
yes,
who knows, maybe I could have a beer, you know, like I no longer have the desire to get fucked up. I don't want to get blacked out, you know, but I'm also, alcohol is not alluring to me in any way. And I don't feel tempted. I don't feel like I miss it today, you know, today. And I think a big part of that is because there's so many delicious non-alcoholic beers now where I can satisfy, like if I do want a beer, there's really good beers that I can just satisfy that with.
That has made a huge difference for me too. Just really good mocktails and really good alcoholic beer, non-alcoholic beer, because so much of the things that I might miss about drinking are like the ritual and having something nice in my hand to drink and feeling part of the milieu that I'm in, feeling part of the crowd, but also the taste and some of the new non-alcoholic beers are really, really good. I mean, this is a better time to be sober, I think, than other times in the past, or to be sober curious, or to be 99% sober. And part of it is because there are these other alternatives. They've become much more available, much more socially acceptable. You don't necessarily have to tell a big story about yourself or explain yourself. I think the culture is much more open and accepting of sobriety. And I also like how nuanced a lot of the conversations around sobriety have become. That while I am a big advocate of 12-step programs, they have saved the lives of people I love truly. You know, that means everything to me. But I think it's nice that there are other points of entry for people now, that there's other language around sobriety, like 99% sober or sober curious, which you talk about a lot. And I just think that that's helpful. I think it's just more diversity, more options makes a bigger space for more people to come in and to find help and to find their own way. And I definitely don't think of my book as prescriptive in any way or as a self-help book. Like, it's really about my journey, which is ongoing. No, I really feel like even since the timeline of the book ended, I'm even choosing alcohol less and less and less. And I'm navigating my relationship with cannabis. Like, that's still something I'm working on. So this is it's a lifelong journey. And my book just documents like a snapshot of it, just a little piece of it.
Yeah, I think I think you're so right about that. And one of the things I really loved about the book was that it does open up this space for people who might be like, you know what, I'm not going to quit drinking because I know I'm not going to stick with it, or I know I don't want that long term. But it basically just, you know, taking that break and led to you having this kind of intentionality about using anything when you would, and almost like a really big appreciation of, I'm thinking about when you baked your first brownies after having quit sugar. And, you know, for me, first of all, I couldn't quit caffeine. I couldn't quit sugar, but a lot of it was because I was told, I think very early on, that, you know, when I even said to my sponsor, when I first got sober, I was like, okay, now I'm going to stop smoking too. And she was like, no, you're not like, not this year. She was like, and I didn't until I got a really bad case of bronchitis and literally couldn't get the smoke down. Like, that's why when I was reading your book, I'm like, oh my God, look at, she did this thing and then that thing. And so it was really, you know, you really did this experiment is really, I've never seen this kind of experiment before, but like, where you come out of it is being able to just like love that first bite of that brownie, like all the things that mindlessly we consume, right? That it was, you know, getting through to the end of the day to get your reward, which was a drink that made you feel shitty the next day. And, you know, all of a sudden that break gave you the space to say, you know, this is what I want today, or this is not what I want today, tonight, at this point. And I think that is really, even for somebody who has no interest in long-term quitting any substance, it just gives you, I feel like you have much more, I feel like if it were me, like I have much more appreciation when I ate a brownie than I ever used to, or than I do now, frankly, when I eat a brownie. You know, it really kind of sharpened focus and, you know, probably really increased some of the joy in the experience when you do.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. There's so much joy and power in making deliberate and conscious choices. And it's something I'm still working on. And again, I feel like this is going to be a lifelong pursuit of being more mindful about those decisions. And then if I am going to have a brownie, to be awake while I'm eating it and to really appreciate and enjoy it. Because yeah, what a joy. I mean, I had definitely had weird, unhealthy eating habits when I was younger, where I would eat like a whole box of cookies. I think I've always been sort of an extreme addictive person, but there's no pleasure in that. There's no joy in that. So it's something that I seek more of in my life, and the experiment definitely brought more of that sense of choice and consciousness into my life. I'm super grateful for that. And even just a little bit more of that goes such a long way.
What I love about this so much is that it really, your book really is, I see it as this like great equalizer of it. You know, it shows that everything can be addictive. Everything can develop either addiction or compulsive behaviors towards substances, towards things, towards people. And that's really the goal of mine and Lisa's podcast is like, we talk about recovery rocks, and it's not just from alcohol. It's like we talk about all things, you know, eating disorders, work addiction. Like there's social media is a big one, of course. So, you know, your book is coming at a time where we're starting to understand mental health and recovery with nuance. And yes, a lot of people are just doing these kinds of social experiments that you're talking about. They're taking a month off of Instagram. They're doing dry January. They're giving up weed for a week. Like people are in a space where they're just becoming more curious. People are, you know, there's more vegan restaurants. There's just more, yes. There's just more like really interesting vegan and vegetarian options now, which make being, you know, vegan or vegetarian curious more accessible. So this book, I just want to say that I think this book really is coming at a perfect time because it just feels like a lot of us are just really waking up to like, shit's not working. What can I reevaluate in my life?
Yeah. And do you feel like some of this came from COVID, you know, which in itself felt like this big experiment that was foisted upon us, but that did, I think in some cases help us realize like we can change, like things can change yeah, overnight. It's like, okay, guess what? Like you're working from home and you're teaching your kids and, you know, you're wearing masks and all of these things that we had to do. I think it did awaken something in our culture that we haven't quite teased out fully yet. But I feel like some of what you're talking about grew out of that experience, that it made some of us want to think more deliberately about the choices that we're making in our lives.
Yeah. Like you said, this huge change can happen overnight that has absolutely nothing to do with you and is completely out of your control. So how do you react to that? And a lot of people reacted by drinking more, being more online, you know, smoking more weed. And we all deal with things the way we deal with them, you know, but exactly, it's like with social media, with the increase of talking about mental health, we do lose some of the stigma. And that is, you know, another goal of mine and Lisa's to destigmatize, you know, it's okay to say you're struggling with something. It's okay to want to reevaluate your relationship with something.
It's okay to ask for help.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's okay to not do it perfectly. You know, I think that there can be so much pressure. And I think that's one thing I wanted to bring forward in my book is like, look, I haven't got this all figured out and I'm still struggling with some things at the end. And, you know, I even end the book by saying like, I'm still me with all my faults and foibles. Like you can't quit being yourself, but you can explore, you can try things. And yeah, and it's worth working on. It's worth thinking about. And I really like what you both said about wanting to create more inclusive and open and tolerant language around addiction and recovery. Because the truth is, like, we are all addicted to things. Everyone is addicted to something. And so like that alone should give us more empathy, more understanding, and help us to support each other in whatever way that we can.
Yeah. I'd love to hear you talk a little bit about, and you call it the in the Great Resignation in your book, because of course, Tawny and I completely fangirl the fact that you are a former indie rock drummer. And if you could talk about sort of what that was about, taking what it meant to you and taking the decision to say, I'm retired.
Yeah, it was an interesting twist in the book, and I didn't really see that this was where I was going, that, you know, I quit all these habits and these substances. And then I got to near the end of the experiment and I thought, well, I haven't quit enough, or I haven't changed enough, or, you know, it uncovered these underlying issues, which I think often happens in any form of recovery. It just made me realize, like, there's other stuff going on here that I need to think about and that I need to work on. And one was quitting the full-time academic job that I had for 10 years that I'd been pretty unhappy with and had been afraid to leave. But I finally found just the clarity to leave that job. And the other thing was my musical career. So for 36 years, I played drums in bands, somewhat off and on, because I also had a couple of kids and moved to England and back. So, you know, there have been times in my life when I wasn't super active as a musician, but by and large, it's been my whole adult life. I've been playing drums in bands, and I had a feeling for a while that it was time to let that go and time to move on. I had back surgery a few years ago. Drumming has been really hard on my body, on my joints, on my back. And at the same time, writing has become more of an active creative outlet for me. I published my first book 8 years ago, had some more ideas for things that I want to write, and just started to feel like if writing is really the thing that I want to be focusing on for the rest of my life, then maybe it is time to rechannel my creative energy to this thing that I can see myself doing if I'm lucky enough to still be alive when I'm 75 or 80. I'm not going to be lugging drums around. Like, it's not going to happen. Some people can do it, but that wasn't going to be me. And I do think that this extended period of time of quitting alcohol and the other things, like, it did leave me in a place where I was able to be more honest with myself about what I can and can't mess with, and also just what my body can and can't deal with anymore. And it was hard to let go in some ways of something that had been so entwined in my identity. Yeah, it's cool to be a drummer in bands, and I got kind of attached to that. So I had to do some work around letting go of that. And I also had to change my vocabulary around the way that I was talking about ending my drumming career. So I had been saying, I'm going to quit drumming. And then I realized, like, no, I'm going to retire from drumming, which connoted a kind of celebration of those years of my career, and just an acknowledgement of my accomplishments. And I felt there was a kind of dignity and a much more positive connotation in saying that I'm retiring. And it also allowed me to keep drumming in my bio, in my identity. So instead of saying I'm a drummer, I'm a retired drummer. I write about this in the book. So, like, drummer is still there. It's like, still, I'm not erasing that part of myself. Like, no, I'm bringing it with me into my future as a writer and whatever other kind of creative work that I do. Like, drumming is always going to be a part of who I am. And I'll even jump up on stage and play tambourine with my friends every now and then to keep that alive. And I think in the past, when I did think about leaving drumming, which I thought about many times, I actually quit a lot of times. I always thought I just had to, like, cut myself off from that and make a clean break. And I am kind of an extreme person. Only an extreme person would quit caffeine and sugar and social media and alcohol and weed, like, all at the same time, right? So I do lean into extremes. Like, that's just my temperament. That's just the way that I am. But I felt grateful that I was able to have the presence of mind and just the consciousness and awareness that this experiment gave to me. It was a real gift of these months to think more deliberately about how I wanted to transition to the next period of my life without amputating my past as a musician.
Ooh, I like that phrasing a lot. Hearing you say that reminds me of when I retired. I was a Zumba instructor for 5 years.
Oh, cool.
And it was not even a huge part of my life. I mean, it was my whole life, you know, and I had to come to terms with like, I want to get back into writing and I don't have the creative energy to do both, you know? Yes. And a lot of people don't understand how much creativity goes into being a fitness instructor. It is.
Oh, I get it.
It is so much fucking work. But it was just like, there was this ceremonious of like, I'm hanging up my Zumba pants. That was in my past. Yes. But it's like, it's this fun little like tidbit that comes up. Like I'll hear a song and I'll be like, oh, I had a Zumba routine to that. Or like, and I'm doing it in my head, you know? But I had to let go of that part of my life to focus on writing. You know, I moved to New York and I started taking writing classes and I was like, this is what I'm going to do now. But that part of that chapter of my life is still so dear to me.
Yeah, it's still part of who you are. And I think one thing that's coming up for me as we talk about this is that it's so important to acknowledge that we just can't do everything. And I think that's another thing that came out of the pandemic was just like, oh, do we really have to be going to the office 5 days a week? Do we really have to be getting on a plane every time we're like going to go give a talk? Can we reconsider? Can we find a better balance and not try to do everything? And I think that there can be so much pressure, maybe especially on women, to just do it all. Mm-hmm. But I really value just the ability to make conscious decisions about how I want to spend my time and where I want to channel my creative energy and to just acknowledge my limitations and then to try to enjoy working within them.
This is so great.
This is, you are really are the perfect guest. Please come back anytime. Before we hop off, we end every episode with a music minute. Are there any songs that you listened to while you were writing this book or maybe while you're promoting it, songs that help you feel grounded or anything music related, anything else music related you want to share with us?
Yeah, there are a lot of songs in the book. There's a lot of movies and books and songs, all these like texts that I kind of wrestle with. But there's one in particular that's really on my mind right now. And that is the song Dignified and Old by the Modern Lovers, which if your listeners don't know, it was singer-songwriter Jonathan Richman's kind of proto-punk band in the 1970s. And their self-titled album, which I absolutely love, came out in 1976. So the song Dignified and Old, which is on that album, it's actually a little bit of a sad song. It's ambiguous, but it seems to be about the loss of a girlfriend that Jonathan is mourning. It's possibly a suicide. It's like a little bit hard to tell, but he declares in the song that he won't die. And he entreats the listener to stay alive as well. At some point in the song, he calls out, "Hey kids, someday we'll be dignified and old together." And it's a promise. To me, it's a promise that like there's something to look forward to in aging. It's the opposite of, you know, live fast, die young, or hope I die before I get old. And it represents one of the gifts of my particular kind of sobriety, in that it just suggests that one gift of the sobriety is that there's like a potential future to celebrate, to look forward to. And if my youth wasn't entirely as dignified as I might now wish it had been, like at least this is a quality that I can try to cultivate more in my life, you know, especially now that I'm not drowning my feelings in whiskey anymore.
That's so great.
That's beautiful. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
So in the show notes, we will have all of the links to get your book and everything, but just for our listeners, just remind them the name of the book and where they can grab it.
Yes. The book is called I Quit Everything, and it is available anywhere that you buy books. Go to your local bookstore if you can. But yeah, you can get it everywhere. And it's going to be an audiobook too that'll be released in just a couple of weeks in early November.
Yay!
And we're also putting a link in the show notes to your playlist for I Quit Everything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That was really fun to put together. Yeah, there's music all over the book. So yeah, please check out the playlist as well.
Check it out. It's a great book. Frida, thank you so much for joining us. This was wonderful.
It was an incredible pleasure. Thank you both so much.
We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening. We hope you like what you heard. If so, please hit subscribe and consider rating and reviewing us so others can find us. Tawny, how can our listeners find you?
You can find me at Tawny M. Lara on all of the social medias. And you can find my blog, Sobriety Party, sobrietyeaparty.com. Lisa, how can we find you and your amazing book?
My book is Girl Walks Out of a Bar, and it is available at bookstores everywhere and online. And you can find me at lisasmithadvisory.com. And I'm on social media at Girl Walks Out. Thanks for listening.